Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down complex topics into insight you can actually use. And today, we're tackling something huge, especially if you're thinking about buying property in, well, really expensive area.
Mm-hmm.
We're zooming in on Long Island, Nassau, and Suffolk counties specifically.
Right. High cost to find, really.
Exactly. If you're house hunting out here, you know the prices are, let's just say, substantial.
Yeah.
We're talking median prices consistently over $600,000.
Easily. Sometimes much higher, depending on the pound.
So whether you're a first-time buyer, maybe stretching for something, or looking at a luxury property on the North Shore, you're going to hit this fork in the road. Conventional loan or jumbo loan.
And it sounds simple, maybe just a name difference, but it's really not.
It dictates everything, right? Your rate, how tough it is to qualify, what you can do later on.
Absolutely. So our mission today really is to give you a clear way to think about this, to figure out which loan type makes sense for your specific situation on Long Island.
Okay, let's do it. Where do we start?
We start with the number. There's one number for 2025 that defines the entire game here. It's the absolute dividing line.
All right. Give it to us. What's the magic number?
Okay, for a single family home in a designated high cost area like Long Island, the conforming loan limit for 2025 is $11,149,825.
Yep. Burn that number into your brain. Because if the amount you need to borrow, not the house price, the actual loan amount is at or below that number,
then you're in conventional territory.
Exactly. But if your loan amount is even $1 over that limit,
boom, you're suddenly playing by jumbo rules.
And the rule book is completely different.
Okay, let's unpack the first one then. Conventional loans. They're kind of the bedrock of home buying for most people, right?
They absolutely are. The workhorse, you could say.
So when we say conventional, what does that actually mean? It's not a government loan like FHA or VA.
Precisely. It means it's not directly backed by the government. But crucially, these loans are designed to meet the standards set by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Ah, the GSEs, government-sponsored entities.
Right. And because these loans conform to those standards, the lenders who originate them can usually sell them off pretty quickly to Fannie or Freddie.
Which means the lender doesn't have to hold on to the loan and the risk for 30 years.
Exactly. That creates huge liquidity in the market. And it generally means the underwriting, while still thorough, can be a bit more standardized and, frankly, sometimes more flexible.
Okay, so who's the ideal borrower here? Let's say I'm looking at a, $750,000 house in, say, Massapequa. Putting down 20%, so my loan is $600,000, clearly under the limit.
Yep. You're smack dab in the conventional loan sweet spot. You'll typically need decent credit. The baseline is often around 620, though better scores get you better terms, obviously.
620 minimum.
Okay. But a key thing is the flexibility you mentioned, particularly with debt-to-income ratios, or DTI.
Right. How much of your income goes to debt payments?
Yeah. Because these loans often go through automated underwriting systems approved by Fannie and Freddie, lenders can sometimes stretch that DTI, maybe up to 45%, sometimes even close to 50% if you have other strengths, like significant savings or a bigger down payment.
That seems like a big deal for Long Island buyers.
Yeah.
You know, people might have good incomes, but also student loans, car payments. That DTI flexibility could be make or break.
It really can be. And another huge factor for conventional loans is PMI private mortgage insurance.
Ugh, PMI. Nobody loves PMI. That's what you pay if you put down less than 20%, right?
Correct. If your loan to value is over 80%, you'll likely have PMI added to your monthly payment. But here's the critical advantage with conventional.
It goes away.
It goes away. It's removable. Once you hit that 20% equity mark, either by paying down your loan balance or because your home's value has gone up.
Which happens a lot on Long Island.
Often, yes. You can request to have that PMI payment canceled. And over the life of the loan, that saves you potentially thousands, even tens of thousands of dollars.
Okay, that's a definite plus.
Yeah.
Control over costs long term.
Huge plus. But there's one more flexibility point with conventional that's really important, especially for savvy investors or people thinking bigger picture.
What's that?
Investment properties. Conventional financing isn't just for the house you live in. You can use it for a second home, maybe that little place out in Montauk you dream about.
Okay.
And you can use it to buy actual investment property, say a two-family house for $700,000 where you rent out one unit. Conventional guidelines allow for that.
Ah, I see. So if you're thinking about building a real estate portfolio, staying under that $1.15 million limit is key.
It's a major pathway. Once you step over that line into jumbo territory, Financing pure investment properties gets much, much harder, if not impossible, with standard products.
Okay, that flexibility is a really powerful reason to try and stay conventional if you can swing it. All right, let's shift gears. Picture someone maybe upgrading or buying in a pricier area. Say they're looking at a $1.5 million home in Huntington Bay, need a $1.2 million loan, they're over the limit.
Instantly, they are now in the jumbo loan world.
Why does crossing that specific dollar threshold trigger such a different process? It feels almost arbitrary.
It's all about risk management for the lender, plain and simple.
How so?
Because that $1.2 million loan is too big to be sold to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. It doesn't conform. So the bank or lender who makes that loan, they usually have to keep it on their own books.
Ah, so they call it a portfolio loan.
Exactly. They're holding the bag, so to speak. If the borrower defaults on that $1.2 million loan, the bank takes the hit directly. There's no GSE backstop.
Okay, that makes sense. If they're taking on all that risk themselves, they're going to be way more careful about who they lend to.
Way more careful.
Mm.
Which translates directly into stricter underwriting standards across the board. The bar just gets raised significantly.
So how does that play out? What are the practical differences in qualifying?
Well, first, forget that 620 credit score minimum. For jumbo loans, you're typically looking at a minimum of 700. And honestly, for larger jumbo amounts or the best rates, lenders often want to see 720, even 740 or higher.
Okay, so step one, higher credit score needed. What else?
Debt to income. Remember we said conventional might stretch to 50%?
Yeah.
With jumbo, much tighter. Lenders usually draw a hard line, often capping DTI strictly below 43%. No exceptions.
Wow, 43%. That could catch some people out, even high earners, if they have other significant monthly payments.
It definitely can. They want a much bigger cushion because the potential loss for them is so much larger if things go south.
And what about proving income? Is that different too?
Oh, yeah. Especially for buyers with complex income, maybe business owners, people with large bonuses or commissions, investment income.
Which is pretty common for luxury buyers, right?
Very common. Since it's a portfolio loan, the lender can't just plug numbers into an automated system. Their own underwriters have to manually go through usually 2 years' worth of tax returns, business statements, everything, to verify that income is stable and likely to continue. It's a much more hands-on, detailed process.
More paperwork, more scrutiny.
Got it. And then there's the big one. The one that often causes the most stress, even for wealthy buyers.
Let me guess. Cash reserves.
Bingo. Cash reserves or liquid assets. With a conventional loan, you might only need to show you have a couple of months' worth of mortgage payments left over after closing.
Right.
With jumbo, especially on Long Island, lenders get serious. They routinely require you to prove you have enough accessible cash or liquid investments, think stocks, bonds, cash accounts, to cover 6, 9, or sometimes even 12 months of the full mortgage payment.
12 months. Of principal, interest, taxes, and insurance.
Yeah.
PITI.
And that's after you've paid your down payment and all your closing costs.
That is a lot. You're not just buying the house. You need a huge chunk of cash sitting on the sidelines just to get the loan approved.
It's the lender's ultimate safety net. They need to know that if your income dips temporarily, you can still make those very large payments for a significant period.
Okay, so jumbo. Higher credit score, lower DTI limit, intense income verification, and substantial cash reserve requirements.
That's the core of it. And remember the use case. Mostly primary homes and maybe high-end second homes, generally not for buying rental properties.
Let's compare them head-to-head on some key points now. We've hit credit scores. Conventional 620 plus toll, no. Jumbo typically 700 plus toll, often higher.
Mm-hmm.
What about interest rates? Is jumbo always more expensive?
You'd think so, right? Because the lender holds more risk. And historically, yes, jumbo rates were often quite a bit higher. But the market's competitive, especially for affluent borrowers. On Long Island today, if you are a highly qualified jumbo borrower, meaning excellent credit, say 760 plus toe, low DTI, tons of reserves.
The perfect profile.
Exactly. You can often find jumbo rates that are very close, sometimes only slightly higher, maybe even occasionally the same as conventional rates. Banks really want that top tier business.
Interesting. So for the best borrowers, the rate difference might not be the deciding factor.
It might not be, but where you will almost certainly feel the difference is in the costs to get the loan.
Closing costs.
Yep. Closing costs are generally higher for jumbo loans. Origination fees charged by the lender might be higher simply because the underwriting process is manual. It takes more time, more expertise.
Makes sense.
But there's a very specific cost difference, too. appraisals.
Okay.
A conventional loan usually just requires one standard appraisal to confirm the property's value. But with a jumbo loan, because the lender has so much riding on that one property,
they want a second opinion.
Often, yes, it's very common for jumbo loans, especially larger ones, to require two separate full appraisals.
Wow. So that adds cost and probably time to the closing process.
Definitely adds cost and can slow things down. They need absolute certainty about the value of the asset they're lending against.
Okay, so even if the rate is similar, the upfront costs for jumbo are likely higher.
Generally, yes.
This brings up a strategic point then. It sounds like if you can manage it, maybe by putting down a larger down payment to get the loan amount just under that $1.15 million threshold.
The conforming limit, yeah.
Yeah.
$11,149,825.
Right. It seems like you should almost always try to stay conventional, even if you could qualify for a jumbo. Is that fair? Is there ever a reason to choose jumbo if you don't absolutely have to?
That's a great question. For probably 95% of buyers, yes. Avoiding jumbo, if possible, is simpler, likely cheaper upfront, and more flexible long term.
But for the other 5%?
Well, because jumbo loans are portfolio loans kept in-house by the lender, sometimes those lenders offer niche products you just can't get with a standardized conventional loan. Things like specific types of adjustable rate mortgages, ARMs, with unique structures, or maybe interest-only payment options for a period. These might appeal to very high net worth individuals with complex cash flow, maybe relying on large quarterly investment payouts, who want a very specific financing structure.
Ah, so bespoke options for unique financial situations.
Potentially, yes. But for most people buying a home, even a high-end one, the standard structures work fine, and the conventional path offers more benefits if you can stay within the limit.
Okay, that clarifies things. Flexibility versus potential customization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the future? Let's go back to that person who had to take the jumbo loan for their $1.5 million house. Are they stuck with that jumbo structure forever?
Absolutely not. And this is a really key strategy, especially in a market like Long Island, where home values tend to appreciate over time.
Yep.
You can refinance a jumbo loan. And specifically, once you've paid down the loan balance enough or your home value has increased enough so that the remaining loan amount falls below that magic conforming limit.
Below $11,149,825.
Yes. You can then refinance that jumbo loan into a conventional loan.
Oh, wow. So you can escape the jumbo world eventually.
You can. You essentially graduate back into the more flexible, potentially lower cost conventional system once your loan balance conforms. It requires discipline in paying down principal or market appreciation, but it's a very common goal for people who initially take out jumbo loans near the threshold.
So that initial pain of the tougher jumbo qualification and maybe higher costs isn't necessarily permanent. It's a bridge to get the house with an eye towards refinancing later.
Exactly. It's a strategic pathway.
Okay, this is super helpful. Let's try and boil this down. If someone listening is trying to figure this out for their Long Island purchase, what are the absolute key questions they need to ask themselves?
I think it comes down to three main things based on everything we've discussed.
Lay them on us.
First, the most straightforward. What's the likely loan amount? Forget the purchase price for a second. Focus on how much you actually need to borrow. Is that number below or above $1,149,825? That's question one, the gatekeeper.
Okay. Below means conventional path is open. Above means jumbo is required.
Right. Question two, what does my financial profile really look like? Be honest. Is your credit score solid, say 680 or above? Or is it truly excellent, 720, 740 plus? Do you have substantial cash reserves ready to sit there after closing an offer 6, 9, 12 months of payments? And can you keep your total debt-to-income ratio comfortably under that 43% mark?
So, assessing if you can even meet the tougher jumbo standards if needed.
Precisely.
Okay.
Because if you need a loan over the limit, but you don't meet those stricter jumbo criteria for credit, reserves, and DTI, then buying that particular house might just not be feasible right now. Your profile dictates access.
Makes sense. And the third question.
Third, what are my long-term goals for this property? Is this purely your primary residence, or are you thinking maybe this could become a rental down the road, or are you actively looking to buy it as an investment property? Because if investment use is part of the plan now or potentially later, you really want to aim for conventional financing, if at all possible, given its flexibility for non-owner occupied properties. If it's strictly your dream primary home and it pushes you into jumbo territory, well, that's the tool you'll need to use.
Price point, financial profile, and property goal. That really distills it down.
Those three questions should guide your initial conversations with lenders.
So, to sum up, the price and loan amount are the first sort. Conventional is generally more flexible, easier DTI, removable PMI, good for investments. Jumbo is necessary for loans above the limit, requires a much stronger financial profile, credit, reserves, DTI, has higher upfront costs often, but gets you into those higher priced homes.
That's a good summary. And for top borrowers, the jumbo rate might be surprisingly competitive.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground. Before we wrap up, any final thought for our listeners navigating this high-stakes Long Island market?
Yeah, maybe just a way to reframe that jumbo decision, especially if you're buying a home where the loan is just slightly over the conforming limit. Think about those higher initial jumbo closing costs. Maybe the slightly less favorable terms you might get compared to if you were just under the limit. Don't just view them as lost money.
How should you view them?
View them as the price you're paying for an option. You're essentially buying the option through that jumbo loan to acquire the house now, with the clear strategic goal of managing that loan down through payments, maybe extra payments and appreciation, until it does conform.
So the jumbo loan becomes a temporary bridge.
Exactly, a strategic bridge. You're paying a bit more upfront, maybe dealing with stricter rules for a while, specifically to reach the point where you can refinance into the more flexible, potentially cheaper conventional world later on. It shifts the focus from just, can I afford this payment, to how can I actively manage this debt to unlock better options down the road? That's proactive financial planning in a high-cost market.
Buying the option to get to conventional later. I like that framing. That's a powerful thought to end on. Thanks for breaking that down for us.
My pleasure. It's a complex topic, but hopefully that framework helps.